It's Tuesday, so it's time for College Football 134 to dive into the Week 12 that was and preview the Week 13 that will be before looking for some value from the weekend. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer, and unlike anyone associated with Owls, we are still employed. We won't get into too much head coaching talk today, although I'm sure it will come up at some point. But we can chuckle just like everybody else in college football is chuckling that all four Owls head coaches have now been fired this season.
That is an incredible stat. Also, I still get so jacked up over that new intro. I'm excited to talk some college football with you today, buddy.
I had to bring myself back into frame because I was the beat on that is a little more enjoyable than I had noticed in the first few weeks of it. speaking of that intro, that is only possible because of corporate. So we should dive into the corporate verbs. Remind folks, College Football 134 is on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it. Verbs, verbs, verbs. And with that, we can get into the week that was. Yes, the best way to look at last week is to apply its lessons moving forward. And when I look at Georgia 31, Tennessee 17, mostly I think Kirby Smart has Josh Heupel's number. I did not pull up this stat before the show because I sometimes forget things. But in Josh Heupel's time at Tennessee, they have averaged – hold on, I almost have it here. They have averaged 40.5 points per game when not facing Georgia. When facing Georgia, they've averaged 14 points per game. Kirby Smart knows how to defend that defense. I'm going to be taking Kirby Smart and Georgia against Tennessee every chance I have moving forward. I know that cost you a few units because you hit both that first half under and the Tennessee number that somebody did not talk you into whatsoever.
No, but I felt good. And obviously it was like they scored a touchdown late. But credit to Kirby Smart. Like they made some adjustments at halftime there and it really paid off for them because Nico looked like an inexperienced quarterback in that game. It was a problem. They were able to run the ball. They ran the ball pretty effectively, the Vols did in that game. But when Nico needed to make a big play, he was unable to do so. And that's credit to that Kirby Smart and that defense, which is still loaded with a lot of NFL talent. And now the SEC is a gosh darn cluster F word.
Let's not, Joe, go dropping F words on this show. Come on now. We try to keep it at least PG-13.
I said F word, right?
Yeah, is that... this is fair. We will get more into that SEC. This is where I use Morass. My freshman year roommate, a Canadian, his last name was Morass. So I've always really enjoyed using the word morass in discussing things that are a cluster. We will get into that SEC morass more in a little bit. Georgia beating Tennessee really... Now, it wasn't a shock. They were 9.5, 10-point favorite. But yeah, confirms that we are heading toward a lot of two-loss SEC lows.
Chaos. Chaos. SEC chaos is coming. That's why you're here, right, Doug? You've got it all sorted out for us?
I've done my absolute darndest, I tell you. And the things that I miss, you remind me of, and that was helpful on what we will. Actually, we're going to get to that right now. We now have Big 12 chaos. We now have a Big 12 headache. Kansas 17, BYU 13. It was just a bad football. Like it was not enjoyable by any regards.
No, it was not a good football game. Like if Kansas wins that football game, and like I was watching it at the time, and I'm like, you don't feel like Kansas obviously felt good about it, but like I didn't feel any better about Kansas watching that football game, even though they've now won like three of their last four, and they're kind of like upsetting the apple cart a bit. Like they should have beat Kansas State. They then beat Iowa State, and now BYU. They're throwing the Big 12 for a crazy loop right now. So I don't know. They only had like 250 total yards of offense in that game, though. I don't know how they did it.
If I tell you Kansas goes on the road and upsets a top 10 team, you are assuming Jalen Daniels of lore arrived. And no, Jalen Daniels went 12 of 19 for 169 passing yards. And yes, Jalen Daniels threw an interception. Shocker of all shockers. And his rushing stats were only 10 carries for 15 yards. It was even Devin Neal. Like if Jalen Daniels isn't going to star, you assume Devin Neal just ran. No. 14 carries for 52 yards. Yeah, he scored twice, but that was more a circumstance. Kansas just out BYU'd BYU?
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe it was just one of these moments where you have a lot of pressure on you as the home team. And like, you're now in this driver's position for this Big 12 playoff spot. And they kind of, it got them. The spot got them.
At the absolute least, Kansas cost the Big 12 a lot of money. Because now there is no way, shape, or form the Big 12 has two playoff teams.
No, I don't think so either. But remember what I said last week, though? What team did I mention last week who is all of a sudden?
You corrected me and I had missed something. I have our Big 12 tiebreakers in front of me.
Yes, let's go through them.
All scenarios assume, and I know you shouldn't assume in college football if anywhere in life, but these are just to make the conversation quicker. All scenarios assume BYU beats Houston to end the season. Arizona State beats Arizona to end the season. And Colorado beats Oklahoma State to end the season. Just if any of those were to become losses, well, then we have a whole new conversation. But assume those are all lopsided that they should be. BYU, you win this weekend, you're in the Big 12 title game. Arizona State, you win this weekend, you're in the Big 12 title game. Colorado, you win this weekend, or BYU wins this weekend, you're in the Big 12 title game. But, yeah, Arizona State, if Arizona State beats BYU – it will be Arizona State in the Big 12 title game. Again, they have to beat – they have to win the – is that the Territorial Cup?
I forget. Whatever it's called, yeah.
Arizona State.
And it's a rivalry game, right? Like, yes. Those, they get crazy.
Don't need to diminish that.
But I don't. I kind of like the way Arizona State's playing right now.
Arizona State is favored this weekend. We will get to that in a bit here. But, yes, the Kansas upset now has the Big 12 – looking at best like there's one playoff team. And we'll get to the playoff in a minute. Let's hit one more game of the week. It was as much as we love every college football week, this wasn't a dramatic one. Georgia took it to Tennessee, and otherwise it was a whole lot of ho-hum. Oregon 16, Wisconsin 13 was the only other result that I felt we needed to discuss. And to me, like I always preface our games of the week recap with the best way to look at last week is to apply its lessons moving forward. The lesson I apply moving forward from that game is, boy, I really like my Ohio State positions. Oregon does not look that dominant. Wisconsin, I mean, they were so thrilled with that three-point loss, they fired Phil Longo on Sunday or Monday. That's not a team that is happy with its situation, even though they almost upset the number one team in the country. I feel much better about my Ohio State position, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm not gonna pat your back just yet. Ohio State looks like a very good football team, but I don't know. You can make the case that Oregon maybe was overlooking Wisconsin a little bit. And Madison's still a tough place to play, so I'm not. They did what they had to do. Every good team in college football, you go back, they have weird results throughout the season, and like nobody remembers those Florida teams back in the day. Sorry, James, back in the day. They had a bunch of close wins that season that probably should have been losses, and nobody talks about that anymore. They just talk about their national championship wins. So there you go. I wanted to give producer Jameson a little love for once.
Boy, you clearly have not read ahead on the outline, because I will be giving him a lot of love later on in the show.
Oh, don't, man.
Hopefully he's not listening. Hopefully he doesn't notice that. So you are still confident in Oregon. Is that simple enough?
I think they match up well with Ohio State, and I think it's a close matchup, but if they win the Big Ten, I'm not going to be shocked by any means or thing.
Okay, I'm gonna keep hoping, and I wanted to check real quick. SP Plus right now would make that approximately, boy, Ohio State's still going to be a 2 to 3 point favorite in Indianapolis.
There you go.
That's
looking good for you.
I keep talking about Indianapolis as if it's a sure thing Ohio State wins, partially because you just need to have some version of a projection. The Big Ten is that simple. Ohio State, Oregon, the winner is the number one seed in the playoff.
Loser's number five. Is that? Are we confident in that?
As long as Oregon doesn't blow Ohio State out, I would feel justified in saying Ohio State, even at 11-2, should be the five. This is where we will real quick throw up my playoff bracket that I put out every Sunday. Now, we get new selection committee numbers today, tonight, in a couple of hours. But as of now, my playoff bracket goes Ohio State 1, Texas 2, Miami 3, Boise State 4.
Woo!
Oregon 5, Penn State 6, Notre Dame 7, Indiana 8, Alabama 9, Georgia 10, Tennessee 11, Colorado 12. So when you see that, what are your thoughts?
The first thing that sticks out to me is that you have Boise State as the higher Mountain West champion, higher rated than a Big 12 champion, which I'm just like, I'm a little bit of a loss for words. Not that that's not unbelievable. It's just more of a, I guess it says more about the Big 12 than it does.
Well, yeah, and working out, Mountain West. I'm saying Colorado should win this weekend. Colorado is favored at Kansas. So Colorado should win this weekend, and Colorado will be favored in the Big 12 title game at this point. I know that's absurd to say, but that's a fact. And if Colorado is the Big 12 champion, I have a hard time putting Colorado with, what, three losses, including a blowout loss to probably not, maybe not going to a bowl game, North Dakota, Nebraska, and start of the season with that close game against North Dakota State. I have a hard time elevating Colorado above what I am projecting to be a 12-1 Boise State.
So are you you're having Boise State. Are we in the clear now for a Boise UNLV?
We'll get back to that. We will come to that at the end of the show. That is, I have those notes on hand as well. But to this point, you have to, like, this bracket is not me projecting every game. This is me saying if what should happen happens, Boise State should finish the year 12-1 with its one loss being a close loss to Oregon.
Pull it back up for me real quick there, Douglas. Yeah, other thing that stands out to me real quick, you're giving Indiana a lot of respect, so I think you're hinting at a close loss to Ohio State. Like, if they get blown out, then the committee might take an opportunity to really ding them because it's just not a big-name program despite the great season they're having. I think they would love to have an extra SEC team in there, which is the other thing that I notice here, of course, and that is Mississippi is the odd man left out in your SEC. What was his name? Moroz?
Morass.
Morass. Are you morass, familiar sorry. With morass? Is SEC morass.
The SEC is just a debacle. And yeah, it still looks like Alabama should make the SEC title game. So let's start off saying that. There is a scenario where Georgia gets in. That scenario depends a lot, not entirely, but a lot on Mississippi State beating Missouri. So I'm going to or LSU finishing the year 6-6. If either of those things happen, Georgia can start to believe. But up until then, it is Alabama. And so in my head, Alabama should lose the SEC title game. And then you have 10-3 Alabama, 10-2 Mississippi, 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Georgia. And it's a debacle of a round robin where Alabama beat Georgia but lost to Tennessee. So
you're giving more credit to Georgia's wins over Texas and Tennessee than you're giving Mississippi for directly beating Georgia.
But you can't use just the head-to-heads because they all beat each other.
Yeah,
you run into a circle, it doesn't get you anywhere. And to me, Alabama should be in. If you go 10-3 and lose the SEC title game, I do not want anybody to be penalized for losing a conference championship game like that. So to me, it is mostly Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia. And
what if they get blown out in the SEC championship game? What if Texas blows the doors off them? What if it's like 50-14? Which sure. I like, because I'm not. We're like, yeah, Alabama's on their way, but this is a weird Alabama team to me, right? Like, they just don't feel, obviously, there's no Nick Saban, but they just don't. They have. They could lose the Iron Bowl this year. Like,
no, I think that loss to Tennessee was mostly about Jalen Milroe being hurt. I think Alabama is what Alabama should be. I think Alabama is quietly really good. Which is why I struggle with you saying, what if they get blown out in the SEC championship game? I struggle to even fathom that possibility because I think they're really good. And I think Alabama's going to keep showing that. And they're going to at some point loudly say, no, Jalen Milroe, he was real hurt against Tennessee to
was
help.
He real hurt against Vanderbilt?
I'm just saying that will help the cause with the committee. Okay, where do you land? Of those four, who do you leave out? 10-3 Alabama, 10-2 Mississippi, 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Georgia. Who do you leave out?
See, this is – it's really like – I think it's Tennessee. Okay. I think at this point – I was more confident in how they look in that game against Georgia, and that's a big game, and they looked – like, it looked good. Obviously, they're up 10-0. It looked good for a while, but that game switched at halftime, and those teams did not – look the same coming out of that break, and I don't know.
Now you know I'd like to leave out Georgia. I just don't think they will.
I don't think they will either, particularly with the notable wins, right? Like that's what the committee will credit them for. They're like, they beat Texas. They've beaten Tennessee. Like that's what they're going to give them credit for. I think Mississippi can hang its hat on that Georgia win and how dominant they looked in that one, and I just haven't seen – while Tennessee did beat Alabama. It was at home. Like, you can make the case that you can, like you said, Milroe was beat up, and it was a defensive struggle. It wasn't like they dominated them. I thought Mississippi looked like the better team when they played Georgia in that game. Like, they just outclassed them, and that's kind of what gives me the edge there.
I want to get you on the record with one more thing before we move forward. I obviously am including Indiana at the 8 spot. Let's say this weekend goes to the spread. Indiana loses by 13 on the road at Ohio State. Indiana finishes 11-1. Do you keep Indiana in the playoff over all of the over the fourth SEC team that we're discussing here, the fourth two-loss SEC team?
That's a tough question. I think you do. I think everything they've done, like, you can't ding them for their schedule too much. Like, they've done everything you've laid in front of them and more. Like, I just, it's not like they're weak on one side. Like, they have a good offense, they have a good defense, they're very well coached. I think they deserve to be there. As long as they don't get blown out this weekend in a really, really ugly game, they deserve to be there, I think.
Okay, we should move on to that exact game. That is the Saturday at noon. Or, you know what we do before Saturday at noon? You and I go live at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Yes, we do.
On the Covers YouTube channel to discuss the entire day's slate. So, folks, if you don't get enough of a Saturday preview from us right now, you don't get enough playoff conversation, come back. The Covers YouTube, I believe that is Covers Sports on YouTube, Saturday morning, live at 9 a.m. Eastern. At which point we will discuss more of Indiana, Ohio State, but we can discuss it now as well. Ohio State, a 13-point favorite for that noon game on Fox. I am looking at that one with great intrigue for all of the obvious reasons. Kurt Cignetti signs an extension during the off week this week, to which somebody said to me, does he do that if he thinks they have a chance? I said, yeah, he's going to do that no matter what. Like, they've been working on that extension for a month. It seems pretty clear to me that he got a phone call from Florida and turned down Florida. And I'm not being hyperbolic when I say that. That is what the timing on this says to me. That extension took 2 or 3 weeks to figure out. 2 weeks ago, Billy Napier got a reassurance about his job. Those things line up for me. I don't think him signing the extension this week has anything to do with their chances this weekend. And no. I think they are live this weekend because this offense is so efficient. The number 3 EPA offense in the country. This kind of offense makes it so you have a chance any given weekend.
Yeah, Curtis Rourke, he's made Indiana Canada's unofficial team this year. But I totally agree with you on the coaching stuff. Whether it's Florida or not, there's going to be other teams that want Cignetti, that want him. And so, yeah, he's going to get that money, and he deserves it, and you need to do that if you want to keep him in Indiana. Otherwise, he'll be gone somewhere else. That's just the nature of college football coaching. It just is. Like I said, I'm really a big believer in what he's done with his program. I said they deserve all the praise they're getting. Now I'm still unsure if I want to take the points with them this weekend. The offense is great and gives you a shot. But we just saw what happened when they went against a good defensive line in Michigan, and Ohio State has a better defensive line.
It's the best defense in the country, in my opinion, by SP Plus numbers. It was why I bet Ohio State in the preseason, was they were returning 9 of 11 starters. The 10th was a safety, Caleb Downs from Alabama. The 12th was a veteran middle linebacker. Like, I was always, the 11th was always a veteran middle linebacker. I was always enthused by this defense, and it has lived up to those expectations.
For sure. And so that's why this Michigan game has me unnerved a little bit. Like, they could have lost this game. Michigan did a really good job of containing that offense. Just 40 rushing yards, and Rourke was just 17 for 28 for 206. Like, yeah, I just, this is a really, it's a tough, it's going to be a tough spot for them. That said, I think the unit that's being overlooked in this matchup is probably the Indiana defense. They rank 9th in success rate in the country. I don't think many people would be expecting that heading into the season. They're 2nd in the country in opponent yards per play. Obviously, Ohio State is a different animal, and they have Jeremiah Smith, but this offense is at its best when Chip Kelly is getting both of those running backs involved, when Will Howard is extending plays with his legs and scrambling designed runs. So that's lots of running, lots of moving the football, lots of clock movement there. So I'm looking at, this is my pseudo SEC under of the week. I didn't find one I love, but we've got one in the Big Ten here. First half under 26.5 That's even money, which is the other reason why I fired on that. Like, I really like getting even money here. I believe this total will probably come down the closer we get to Saturday. I feel like the Sharps realize like this is a matchup of two really good defensive teams. And I think Indiana can game plan well enough in the first half, at least on defense, to not contain, but do a decent enough job against this Ohio State offense early on while they try to establish that run. And that's going to lead us to fewer points in this first half.
I agree with you. This number is likely to come down by the weekend. You getting this at even money makes that point pretty clear that this could fall by the weekend. That said, my worry for you will be Kurt Cignetti's aggression. If there's anybody for sure who's going to come out in that first quarter and just, if you'll allow me the phrasing, smoke him if you got him. Coach Sig will smoke him if he has him in that first quarter. He won't hold back. If he can put Ohio State on his heels, he will. He will not be conservative early. If there's a worry for you, it is that their game script is that finely tuned.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, I understand that it's probably the best way to try to take this Ohio State defense off guard is just come at them right away. I don't know what their ability will be to keep that up throughout. Like, maybe they have a good, like, 12, 15 plays lined up. But after that, like, it would be interesting to see how successful they can be against this Ohio State defense.
Let's move on from the Big Ten. I noted no other Big Ten games that I was worrying about today on Tuesday. We need to talk more about the Big 12. Colorado at Kansas. Colorado, 2.5-point favorite. BYU at Arizona State. Arizona State, a 3-point favorite. Those games are both at 3:30 Eastern. The Big 12 race is pretty much going to be decided right there. And both those spreads being within a field goal is mind-boggling from where we were just a few weeks ago. Kansas not looking competent. Colorado looking better and better, now looking real good, but still only a 2.5-point favorite. I lean Colorado there because they will have the two best players on the field. And I think they all know, like, this is what this Kansas can go play a spoiler. Kansas can still dream about a bowl game. Colorado's got too much at stake.
Yeah, it comes back to, like, that just win wasn't that impressive, right? We saw them win that game, but it's still kind of been that same Kansas team we saw all year. We kind of talked about, like, Jalen Daniels still threw an interception sort of thing. I think we are probably still undervaluing Deion here a bit too. Like, 4 straight wins and 8 straight covers, and you're getting it at less than a field goal right now. It seems, against a Kansas defense that's still, what are they, 98th in success rate at this point still, and they have to, and their job is to contain Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders.
And that's the exact point I wanted to make. Kansas ranks number 116 in giving up quality possessions. Literally half opponents' possessions turn into genuine scoring opportunities. Travis Hunter is, above all else, a magnificent red zone threat.
Yes.
He might get 2 or 3 like fades to just add to his tally and his Heisman candidacy because they're going to have that many chances. Kansas has a decent scoring territory defense, but when you give Colorado that many chances, you're going to get burned.
Yeah, for sure. And for Arizona State, okay, I like Arizona State a lot, and I really enjoy watching them play right now, but is this an overreaction line now that they're favored? Like, if BYU wins that game, is BYU an underdog this week?
Is BYU an underdog? Yes, because Arizona State has come on strongly. Okay. I'm not saying that's, but so I'm saying that's an overreaction. We are effectively half our handicap on these two games. It sounds like it's the same handicap. It's Kansas's win against BYU was just an ugly football game, and we don't know what to make of it.
Correct. And BYU has been arguably the most consistent Big 12 team throughout the season. So then to give the opposing team 3 points, like, I'm not, it just doesn't feel like, I like Arizona State, and I circled them on my, when I was going through all the games this week, but it just feels like giving BYU 3 points in this spot feels like a decent spot to take. I'm not going to bet it just because it feels like it's, it's too unpredictable at this point, but Arizona State, this is going to be a tough matchup. It feels like it's going to be a close one. So
I suspect I will have some personal money on BYU in no small part because Arizona State, bad scoring territory defense, ranks number 91 in the country, giving up 3.75 points per quality opposing possession. Numbers I have there courtesy of our good friend coming on soon, Parker Fleming. BYU creates quality possessions on 57% of its drives, number 8 in the country. So BYU gets itself those chances, and Arizona State fails to defend once they're there. To me, that sets up for BYU to have a higher success rate where it matters most this week.
There you go. And if BYU is able to generate a couple turnovers in this game as well, then I think you're getting a little value with the road team.
Now, let's go to one more game of the week. And again, we will discuss many, many more games. Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube channel. But before then, let's talk about Army versus Notre Dame in Yankee Stadium. In Yankee Stadium as the 100th anniversary of Grantland Rice writing the Four Horsemen line. The piece of Notre Dame lore that I would argue propelled them further than anything else. 100 years ago this month. Army versus Notre Dame. Notre Dame is a 15.5 point favorite for that 7 o'clock Eastern time on NBC. We've seen what Notre Dame can do against triple option. Five, six turnovers against Navy? Notre Dame faces Navy every season. Al Golden looks at the triple option and doesn't sweat, unlike everybody else in the country. I still see Notre Dame as a 3-score favorite against a quality team as a big line. Notre Dame's offense is good. Its run game is great, but it is not a consistent scoring offense. When Notre Dame covers, it's because pump blocks, interception returns, and fumble returns, which they generate. They generate at a great rate. But I don't know that you're going to generate them as much against Army as you did against Navy.
It's funny you say that because I have another best bet for you here. And it's going to be Notre Dame over its team total of 30.5. You get that -115 over at FanDuel. You said it. Like, they're a team that can defend the triple option. They rank 2nd in success rate. They don't give up explosive plays at all, which has been a big part of the Army offense this year. But Army also came back to earth a little bit last week. Bryson Daly returned, but he just did not have that same explosiveness, that same burst that we saw the first, 7-8 games of the season we saw from them. And he missed the Air Force game, obviously. 4.3 yards per carry in the win over North Texas. Obviously, they played the huge ball control game in that one, but 14 points against North Texas, like, that is not a good defensive team. It doesn't bode well for me. So I think that Notre Dame is good enough. I get your point. Like, they need to have extra possessions to get to that point. So I think they can do that. I think they can take away, whether it's turnovers or just shorter Army drives them. But like, instead of their 7-8 minute drives, we're getting a couple of 3-minute drives out of Army here because that defense is so good, giving Notre Dame an extra possession or two. I like the over team total. And generally, my thought here would be like, oh, well, like, maybe it's when I'm usually looking at a game, it's under for an Army team total in this one, but the number isn't that great. I think it's like 14.5. And I saw like juice to -150. And so I was like, no, I can't really play that. So with that in mind, we go to the team total over instead because I think they can get an extra possession or two here. And they've gone over this number in 6 straight games. I like them to do it again.
Your thought process boils down to Notre Dame's defensive success rate, number 2 in the country, 34.4%, implying that opponents fail on 2/3 of their snap-by-snap basis. Army needs to succeed 3 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards at a time, 3 yards, 4 yards, five yards at a time. If Notre Dame interrupts 2 of those, Army's going to punt.
And the other thing that goes into that is usually in old Army-Navy or Service Academy offenses, you just have those 4 or 5 yard rushes over and over and over again. But this year they've been supplemented with those explosive plays, but Notre Dame is almost as good at limiting those as well. So I think that's a bad matchup for Army, which we saw, and that it was a bad matchup for Navy. And I like them to perform well, and they'll probably cover, but I like the team total over a little bit more in this one.
I can recognize the conservative nature of the team total there. It's why you and I praise team totals all season long. Let's go find more value for this weekend. You found a few best bets in the games of the week. We will find more best bets in those games of the week live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. But we should get to some of this week's. I am coming into this week a little frustrated. I went 4-5 last week, lost a little more than a unit. Some of the absolute worst beats of my Virginia scoring a backdoor touchdown with seconds on the clock. San Jose State going from winning the game outright to losing by 21 when I had them at plus 14.5.
So tough.
These were Kennesaw State hit his team total over because of a 7-yard touchdown drive. And I'm just going to shake those off. I'm going to charge forward. I know that I will find more value this week.
Yeah, I know you will too. I'm coming off a week where I went 3-5. It's been a bit of a slog the last couple of weeks, minus 2.44 units, and we're down to negative 15.79 units. So hopefully you're fading me at this point. The problem is I just didn't hate. I didn't hate many of the plays this week. Like, John Mateer had a great game. Raheem Sanders didn't play the way you as well as you think, but it really boiled down to that Tennessee game not really going my way, and that was the difference on the weekend. Other than that, like, I didn't hate anything. So
if you hated it and you gave it out on the show, I'd be pretty furious with you.
Fair enough.
I want to start us off quick here because I have a Wednesday night play. It's a Wednesday night play that you hear me in November say I have a Wednesday night play. You already know what I'm going to do. I'm going to bet Eastern Michigan. I'm betting Eastern Michigan as a 1-point home favorite. This is a simple handicap. I don't want anyone to overthink this. Eastern Michigan is 5-5. It ends the season at Western Michigan. If Eastern Michigan is going bowling, it's by beating Buffalo this week. Buffalo's already 6-4. Buffalo is 1-3 against the spread in the last month. Now, another Eastern Michigan history lesson. The last 8 years. No, you know what? Let's ignore 2020 for all the obvious reasons. In the last 7 years, Eastern Michigan has gone to 6 bowl games. In the first 41 years of Eastern Michigan football, they went to 1 bowl game. Chris Creighton has turned nothing into a genuine program. 6 of the last 7 seasons, at least 6 wins, excluding 2020. Before that, in 40-plus years, 6 seasons of Eastern Michigan being 500 or better. Chris Creighton knows how to get this team to this high floor of a bowl game. And this year, to do that, he's got to win one more game. That is this week, Wednesday night, Eastern Michigan by 1 against Buffalo. To me, it's a situational spot that Chris Creighton has proven he can handle time and time again, 6 times over.
There you go. Emu, buddy. Emu.
I refuse to
stop. On a Wednesday night. Don't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop. There you go.
How are you starting this week? I'm not starting because you already have 2 best bets on the docket.
I've got a bit of a sick one to join you, though. I'm going with an East Carolina money line to start the week at plus 125 over at BetMGM. They are visiting North Texas this weekend. So East Carolina, I did a preview for them last week, and I realized they made a switch at quarterback to this kid named Caden Hauser. He used to play at Michigan State. And he's been slinging it the last few weeks. He's thrown for over 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns. Now, they did not cover last week when they played Tulsa because he got a little too excited at times and threw a few too many picks. But he did cash my over yardage bet in that game. I expect him to have a few more passing yards going up against a North Texas defense that ranks 103rd in success rate and 94th in EPA per drop back. East Carolina's feeling good right now. They've won 3 in a row. The last game was the first game he started, which they did not cover as well. So they're playing pretty well right now. While North Texas they're on quit watch right now. They might not be officially there, but we saw them get kind of blown out by UTSA last week. They are 1-4 ATS in their last 5 games. Their offense is pretty one-dimensional at this point. And ECU has a quietly solid defense that ranks 24th in success rate. Like, their offensive success right now is 67th, but I'm not sure if that's fully accounted for Hauser being the quarterback right now. So I like ECU to get the win here and keep rolling.
I don't hate it anytime you fade somebody who was on quit watch. I am not doing that, but I am going back to a similar tried and true favorite. Eastern Michigan, tried and true favorite. Fading teams on quit watch, tried and true favorite. Taking UNLV by 7.5, tried and true favorite. I will admit, this is a Friday night game at San Jose State. Some of this might be San Jose State.
I was going to say, it's a bit of an FU game to San Jose State, right?
What they did to me Saturday night is I'm still recovering from. But maybe I should have known better. San Jose State is now 1-5 against the spread in its last 6. But mostly, I am betting UNLV to keep its Mountain West chances alive. Mountain West tiebreaker. So in theory, Colorado State is a field goal underdog against Fresno State on Saturday night. Colorado State loses. and UNLV wins on Friday, they are tied. The first tiebreaker in the Mountain West is a composite ratings, not head-to-head, not conference winning percentages, ratings. And UNLV has a massive edge. It's SB+, ESPN's SOR, Factor's KPI, and Sports Source. UNLV has a massive edge. So they're just going to escalate that. They know, and I'm sure the coaches is – the coaching staff are being hyperbolic this week. We need to make sure our ratings are covered. They're fine, but they're going to lie about it and go cover this 7.5. Why, beyond that situational spot, do I like this? Because San Jose State's defense ranks number 125 against the dropback, EPA per dropback. You know how I feel about Haj Malik Williams and the UNLV passing game. UNLV will find moments to exploit the Spartans' pass defense, and this UNLV offense will love that. We've seen it do that well in the last 2 months.
There you go. I still think this is mostly just your hatred for San Jose State right now.
A little bit.
But we keep talking about Quit Watch, and I've got another Quit Watch for you because I'm going with Texas Tech -3.5 as they travel to Oklahoma State this week. And yeah, I think the Pokes, I think they've quit. They're not on Quit Watch. They've quit. It is. Now, 7 losses in a row where they have only covered one of those games. It's ugly right now. It's really ugly. They rank 97th in success rate rushing. Ollie Gordon still just not the Ollie Gordon we were expecting heading into the year. The defense is just pretty bad. 112th in success rate. 121st on the drop back, 90th against the rush, 99th in EPA per rush. Texas Tech has this guy named Taj Brooks, who's, if you don't know, he's probably one of the, like, he's a great running back and one of the better running backs that maybe casual college football fans don't really follow, but he is a star. On top of that, it's just Texas Tech, they know they're the better team right now. They could have a bit of a sour taste in their mouth. They were up 13-0 on Colorado last week. Obviously, they have some defensive issues, but which Sanders and Travis Hunter took advantage of. But I think they've just, like, that leaves a sour taste in their mouth. They're going to want to come out and smack Oklahoma State around in this one. I think they have a balanced offense, and the defense is good enough here to shut down whatever Oklahoma State's putting out there right now. -3.5. Love this bet. I think this is closer to 4.5, 5 by the weekend. So give me 3.5 right now.
I told you before the show that was on my list of almost make it. And so when I saw that, I liked that you had it, but now I can't bet it because BYU showed last
BYU,
week.
Again.
If you and I have the same bet, it's a guaranteed loser. A bet I know you did not consider. A bet I am making right now because I don't expect this number to exist before Saturday. I am betting Florida. +10.5 against Mississippi. I think this number falls to 9.5 by the weekend, which is why I'm taking it now. -112 at DraftKings. Florida is 6-1 against the spread in its last 7. Our season-long thought of bet Florida live when they go down has been really smart because we have not been burned by Billy Napier having some stability. We, credit to us, stayed away from getting hurt there. Hey, I came around in Colorado at the right time. It's made me some good money the last few weeks. I bet Florida money line against LSU last week. Maybe I think I'm having the same moment here where I'm coming around on the right time on Florida. I am betting this because I don't think 10.5 exists come Saturday. The other piece that's kind of a small edge, but I want to note it. Mississippi is 2-8 to the under this season. That creates an edge for a 2-score underdog. That's a lower scoring game. Therefore, in theory, a closer game. I think Florida and DJ Lagway have found something. They are playing some of the most confident football, relatively speaking, in the country, and that's going to come to the Rebels' expense this weekend.
I did not. So I have Florida on my notepad right here, and I was like, oh, I can't do it. I can't do it just because of Mississippi's defense, but I like your thought with the under there. I think the offense in this total is being overvalued a little bit now, still because of that 63-point outburst against Arkansas that Mississippi had. You take that one away, 28 points against Georgia, 26 against Oklahoma, 26 against LSU, 27 against South Carolina, 17 against Kentucky. That all lends value to playing an underdog in a game that's probably going to be lower scoring than the total suggests.
I like it when you tell me I'm right. I also like it when I
didn't
do
say
my
it out
best.
Loud, but I did get there somehow.
I do my best to bring us chaos by taking Florida as a two-score underdog. And I know the chaos I bring there is nothing in comparison to what our good friend Parker Fleming is about to bring to us. That man is our friendly chaos agent. So I'm going to bring him on in to see what chaos Parker has for us today. How are you, Parker? Parker, you got to go hit that mute button one more time.
I'm on the mute button. My microphone is across the desk. It's just been a whole day, but I'm here and I'm glad to be here. And hope you guys are doing well. I'm sporting some covers merch of my own again. Being
love
a team player here, I like to do it for the brand. Got a couple interesting plays that I'd love to drop on you and see what your thoughts are.
For sure.
I'm scared. I you say interesting, I hear fearful.
I want to let the listeners know that there is no intent of this being best bets. I think at this point of the season, this is the most interesting bets here. So certainly some interesting plays. I want to start with one. I like college football teams that are annoying. Obviously, you'd want to be good more than annoying, but annoying in itself is kind of a virtue for some college football teams in certain spots. And a team that has been annoying against good offenses all season is the Kentucky Wildcats. Now, I am not interested in the Kentucky Wildcats scoring any points at all. I'm not interested in them making the game competitive by staying within a certain point margin. What I am interested in with Kentucky is them absolutely dragging Texas to the depths of hell, getting them in the mud, and making this a complete slugfest, clock rolling, grind out kind of game. We've seen Texas look sluggish in multiple spots this season. We've seen Kentucky go up against high octane offenses and be very, very frustrating to deal with on the defensive side of the ball. They have a deep stable of defensive back or defensive linemen that they rotate through. They're 14th in EPA per play, 28th against the rush, 30th against the dropback. They are 79th in echo rate allowed, quality possession rate. They are 27th in points per quality possession. They are the definition of bend, don't break. They will let you churn off a lot of the clock and not give you very many points for it. So let's go with an under on Texas and Kentucky. I believe that's in the 46-45 range. I have
47.
This in the low 40, up to 47. So even better for me. I have this in the low 40s. I think that this game could absolutely get into rock fight status, and I'm going to back the under in this one.
As of Tuesday afternoon, Parker, I even see a 47.5 at -110 at Bet Rivers. And there's one angle on this game you didn't even mention that I think further underscores your thought. Texas, yeah, go ahead and look ahead to Texas A&M. Texas is not going to be aggressive. Texas is not going to put anything at risk. Texas wants to get out with a 3-point win for all it cares.
Oh, that's what I think too. I think this is they're gonna take what they can get here and just get out of there as quickly as possible.
Yep, that's definitely the angle on top of it. Just makes it all the better there that we kind of understand. You know, the motivation angle is a little bit different as well. Kentucky fighting for their lives at every point this week. So I like that one a lot. Another one, I'll go over to the Big 12. I see Kansas State and Cincinnati. I see Cincinnati as an 8.5-point dog as of the time I did my notes this morning. Obviously, shopper beware. Make sure you're looking for the right number there. I think Cincinnati has had two very bad games, and they've still been positive net success rate the last 2 weeks. They've had disastrous turnovers that are entirely uncharacteristic of what we've seen out of Brendan Sorsby and this offense that is actually good. Compared to my expectations, compared to where I thought this program was, they've been actually good. They're 35th in EPA per play. This Kansas State defense is all the way down at 39th. It's not a great unit, and what Kansas State wants to do on offense is they want to run the ball. They even said this week, Andrew, that they in week 13, they're talking about letting the quarterback cut him loose. And you're thinking, what are we doing for the first 12 weeks of the season if this is what we're doing now? But all that to say, they want to run the ball. They're 14th in EPA per rush. Cincinnati is 22nd overall. So you're going to make Cincinnati is more than a touchdown here. I think in this state, the way that Cincinnati's played, the market fundamentals have been a little bit better. So I like Cincinnati as an underdog here as my second play this week.
Yeah, Kansas State just they haven't really lived up to expectations as well this year. So obviously they have to fight for this one, but Cincinnati is going to fight too.
Another one that I think is interesting. I'm looking at my sheet here. Can we do it for the brand? If this was a blind resume and I just handed you team one playing at team two, and it's a 12.5, 13.5 point spread, depending on where you shop, obviously shopping is smart. You would take the coach who's covered every game this season except one, you take the team that is just absolutely demolishing quality opponents and say, yes, there's no way they lose this game by 2 scores. I'm gonna back Kurt Cignetti. I want stock in Indiana as a double-digit dog here. I think
love it.
Ohio State is absolutely going to beat them. I think them on the perimeters, you know, is really hard to deal with. Their defensive line is certainly presents matchup problems all along Indiana. But Indiana's found ways to get Rourke the ball out quickly. They found ways to be frustrating. And I think Ohio State could win this decisively and fall well short of that 13.5. My model has this at 4.5. So again, that comes back to that comment about helmet scouting. I think these are far closer in kind of perception. Ohio State has some flaws. Indiana does have a bit of a coaching advantage here. So again, probably wouldn't go a whole unit on that or try to redeem an entire season of losing by putting it all in on that basket. But I think in terms of assets, you'd like to have stock on in before the game starts. Indiana, Kurt Cignetti as a double-digit dog is one I'm certainly interested in.
I took the under in the first half here because I feel like Cignetti can game plan really well against in this situation. So I'm a bit of a believer in this Indiana team as well. I was a little fearful to take the points, but I like what you're spinning there.
And that is Parker always making things overly interesting for us, which is, you know, the perks of joy of life. His Indiana thought certainly aligns with what you were thinking.
With the first half, yeah, I really think that Cignetti can game plan well in the first half. And I agree with him that I think Cignetti's a better coach than Ryan Day at this point. But yeah, it was I'm glad that you're back. I missed you.
Well, hey, you know when else we'll be back? We will be back at live 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday on the Covers YouTube channel. Whatever tech difficulties I was fighting are already fixed. I just had to do a computer restart. So we'll be good to go Saturday morning live at 9 a.m. Eastern. Andrew, at that point, I think all we have left to do is recap our bets, yes?
That's what we got. So
what do you have this week?
I have got the under 26.5 in the first half. That's at even money between Ohio State and Indiana. Like we've said that a few times, really like Indiana's chances to keep this one close, particularly in the first half. I'm on Notre Dame's team total over 30.5. That's -115. We're on the East Carolina money line +125, taking on North Texas, and Texas Tech -3.5 going against they've already quit Oklahoma State Cowboys.
My week starts off on Wednesday, Eastern Michigan by one against Buffalo to get Chris Creighton bowl eligible for a seventh time in 8 non-2020 seasons. I have UNLV Friday night by 7.5 at San Jose State because I have a grudge against the Spartans and because the Rebels can still make the Mountain West title game. And I have Florida at +10.5 to producer Jameson's great thrill against Mississippi to keep things interesting down in Gainesville. That will do it for us today. Remember to go find College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Like it, review it, love it, appreciate it. We will see you live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern.